War is hell. We can all agree on that. But did you ever think and wonder how much less interesting the History Channel would be without it? We'll get back to this. I'm Chris Rodell, and this is your Use All the Crayons podcast. And I'm being literal when I say it's your podcast. I've found no concrete evidence to indicate there's anyone but you and I involved in this endeavor. That would be alarming to a career-minded people with ambition. Not me, I have no ambition. If it's only you and I, we can strike up a genuine friendship, albeit one where I do all the talking, but that's just the nature of the forum. When I launched this podcast, and I'd encourage you to listen to the early extravaganzas, I envisioned everyone in the community having a role. But the logistics of that kind of production is complicated, and complicated is jarring to a guy like me. So I'm fine keeping it just between you and me. I'll try and keep it interesting, and all I ask of you is you pretend that you're interested. One of the most cherished military maxims about generals always fighting the last war is dead wrong. There'll never be a last war. Being born with a philosophical bent, I spend a good deal of time wrestling with great questions of the ages. Why are we here? What happens to us when we die? And if God created heaven and earth, who or what created God? Those are all topics for another day. Today is Memorial Day. I think I have an answer to the questions that have puzzled great thinkers since it was first posed in 1970. The question? War. What is it good for? After much soul searching, I've come up with an answer. It is as follows. Without war, there would be no great war movies. I understand my answer is unlikely to salve the wounds of the veterans and widows for whom today means so much more than a traditional basic cable movie fest. I know very few males, the gender primarily responsible for launching and fighting wars, for whom war movies do not resonate. I wonder if the two are related. But I know many men today who are still tuned in to watch Patton, The Guns of Navarone, Saving Private Ryan, The Longest Day, and other epic films based on man's inhumanity to man. I think it's because men wonder how we'd react under fire. Would we flee or advance? Would we respond like our fathers did? In my case, the answer is probably affirmative. Like many descendants of the greatest generation, I come from military stock. The Declaration seems to bestow me with reflected glory. My dad served. He stood on that bright line that helped save the world from tyranny. Did he storm the beaches at Normandy? No. Dad was a U.S. Navy chaplain's assistant. The only less hazardous military title I can imagine is Army Pillow Tester. He had no war stories about heroics. In fact, my favorite war story of his was the one he told about waiting to board the USS Pocono to be shipped off the Pacific on August 7, 1945, when someone told him we'd drop the atomic bomb on Hiroshima. My dad said, "What's an atomic bomb?" Many historians will argue the ethics of the point, but the atomic bomb forced a swift Japanese surrender and likely saved the lives of my father and millions of others who would have perished invading an entrenched and motivated Japan. We naturally tend today to memorialize only the ones who fought on the front lines, the wounded and the dead. In fact, the original intent of Memorial Day was to memorialize those killed in action. It has somehow morphed into an omnibus military appreciation day, and I'm cool with that. I tend to believe heroics are often the result of circumstance. In that regard, I'm like the protagonist of what to me is the greatest war movie I've ever made. A war movie that shows not a single gun being fired, and the only notable death is unseen, but merely mentioned in a letter read aloud. It's Mr. Roberts. The 1955 John Ford movie stars Henry Ford as the beleaguered Lieutenant Doug Roberts, the executive officer aboard the cargo supply ship Reluctant. Roberts itches for action, but it so excels at his mundane duties that the tyrannical captain, played by James Cagney, won't approve his repeated requests for frontline transfer. In the end, his beloved crew secretly rigs the transfer, and Roberts is thrust into combat. The movie concludes with a bored crew getting two letters from Roberts' new ship. The first is from Roberts, who relates how his destroyer is in the thick of the action near Okinawa. In hindsight, he had an epiphany about his old shipmates and the unseen enemy of the terrible war is the boredom that eventually becomes a faith, and therefore a terrible sort of suicide. I now know the ones who refuse to surrender to it are the strongest of all, he wrote. The second letter is from one of Roberts' shipmates. It conveys Roberts was killed in a below-deck kamikaze attack. He was drinking coffee, and he never saw it coming. Just another example of a sad, useless death in a war's grim ledger. But geez, it makes for one hell of a movie. As a student of history, it is my understanding that man has waged war over injustice, territory, greed, vengeance, pride, and even reasons as petty as national vanity. As a student of breakfast, I'm surprised man has never waged war over bacon. I'd enlist. The typical Swiss Army knife was invented on this day in 1897 and has 32 functions. It comes in handy anytime any besieged soldier needs to trim a mustache, pop a cork, or trim an unruly pinky toe. In its entire history, there are no recorded incidents of it being used to slay or subdue an enemy, and you can't help but wonder how different European history would be had someone first invented the Swiss Army bazooka. What for me is a melancholy concession to either age or ailment, a double wild turkey on the rocks will no longer be my default order when imbibing at the home bar. I've been drinking those ever since it dawned on me that wild turkey was the bourbon that best describes me. I'm not a Jack or a Daniel, a Jim or a Beam, a Basil nor a Hayden. I'm a turkey who sometimes gets wild. But I'm having balance issues that inevitably are exacerbated by drink, and I don't want to embarrass myself or the bar. So I'm cutting back. I now order a single shot on the rocks with a splash of water. I lose all my writerly cred if people hear me ordering that way. I need help in naming the lame-o drink. Do you prefer A, instead of wild turkey, mild turkey, or B, tame turkey? Let me know what you think. On this Memorial Day, I'd advise people who thank a veteran to either thank a veteran or go right out and enlist. I always opt to thank the veteran. I think I would be a terrific peacetime soldier, which is not unlike being a spouse in a productive marriage. Sure, there's lots of bitching and petty gripes, but the GIs realize that we're all working for the greater good and soldier on. Adding kids to the equation makes a family unit like boot camp, where the parents are the drill instructors and the youngins are the green recruits. And I think I'm good in that role, as is my wife, Colonel Valerie. But none of us can predict how we'd react under fire. Would I be a hero or a coward? I can't handle the truth. Like a lot of men, I'd like to be tested, but I never felt this situational urge to put on a uniform like so many others have done. I think I and the nation are weaker for it. I'm sure I could have benefited from a couple of years of service right out of high school. Imagine what kind of shape the country would be in now if instead of going straight to college bars, guys like me would be conscripted to spend 18 months in service of our country. And I'm not even talking about the overseas duty in hostile lands. I mean, if at 18, we'd have done some basic boot camp and been dispersed to clean up the ghettos, to dig sewage projects in the Appalachians, or help distribute food in friendly company to the elderly. If I could have instilled a sense of national morality and all too often alien what it feels like to do good for strangers. But to enlist with the understanding that enemy fire will be trained on you takes another breed. I like to think I'm like Albert Einstein, and I doubt he'd ever reciprocate in any fashion. But we're both what he called rational pacifists. We don't want to kill anybody. We believe reason can prevail and that war should be the last least welcome option. Rational pacifists saw sound reasons to engage in bloody all-out war with Hitler and the Taliban. We don't see the build-up to war with Iraq. Didn't see that in the build-up to war with Iraq. Yet, even in a war that many of us felt was misguided, hundreds of thousands of men and women, many righteously motivated by the attacks on 9/11, lined up to serve because they believed it was their sacred duty. The surfer dudes have practically neutered the powerful word, its original impact, but man, that's awesome. A few years ago, I was golfing with friends on Memorial Day and admitted to feeling sheepish that we were skipping along in the sunshine, enjoying our favorite pastime, some beers and giggles, while men and women not too different from us were hunkered down in boiling bunkers in places like Bakuba and Jalalabad. I'm going to say those again, Bakuba and Jalalabad. Despite being mired in two difficult wars, there was no home front hardships in our little world. My buddy Ronnie, himself an Army vet who'd served in Korea, gave a poignant response masked in a cheerful smile. Hey, this is what they want us to be doing. This is why they serve. Well, that made me feel even more unworthy. So those are some Memorial Day options for you to consider amidst the barbecue and the beers. Either thank a vet or climb out of your lawn chair and go enlist. Me, I think I'll call Ronnie up and see if he wants to be golfing this weekend. Go golfing this weekend. Guys like him are too humble to accept my thanks for what they've done on behalf of my country. It's no big deal, they say. That's too bad. Means I'll probably have to give him strokes. Alas, that means that's the sad extent of my sacrifice on this Memorial Day. From 2015, about the angry flag-waving girl. It's getting away from me here. Hang on. Here it is. I'll have mixed emotions after the pending completion of the pivotal bridge reconstruction project outside my office. Sure, as the resumption of normal traffic will be welcome, but it will come at a cost. I'll miss micro-flirting with the angry flag girl. The bridge between my home here in Youngstown and all the stuff I need to do in Latrobe has been under construction for months now. Crews have been toiling to repair the Gateway State Route 982 bridge over U.S. Route 30. PennDOT considers it enough of a landmark that they've opted to pay the extra dough to inscribe the bridge with sides with tributes to Native sons Fred Rogers and Arnold Palmer. One side says it's a beautiful day in the neighborhood. The other, a greater Latrobe area legend, Arnold Palmer. So that'll be the inviting target for high school vandals eager to spray paint helpful messages about which local girls are easy. I'm sure the angry blonde flag girl won't mind like that at one bit. And not just because I suspect she was once easy in high school. She's a dirty blonde, more dirt than blonde. I've never seen her without a cigarette and a scowl. She looks like someone who either loves to drink or just crawls out of bed each day looking naturally hungover. I sense she hates men, her job, and will murder anyone who approves. Let me start that again. I sense she hates her job and will murder anyone who dares change lanes without her approval, something no motorist in their right mind would do. She's too scary to defy. But there's something about her angry-looking woman waving a traffic flag and telling me just where I can go that I find impossible to resist. I wonder if it's because my sweet darling wife, the Lutheran church organist, is her exact opposite in every way. Val plays just a closer walk with thee. The traffic babe snaps her flag, motioning me it's time to turn to proceed. I imagine her idea of safe sex is when she leaves the Dayglow vest on and nothing else. Maybe she's one of those people who after 8 hours out there on the hot pavement has trouble even in intimate situations switching off. She must be bossy in bed. Okay, move forward, slowly, slowly. Now turn to the left, a little more. There, good. Now keep your eyes on me. I'm about to give you the signal. Not yet. Okay, now! Go, faster. You're drifting out of your lane. I close my eyes and in my mind I hear a flag snapping like a whip over and over. I imagine she keeps a stack of traffic pylons in her bedroom to maintain that feeling of control she exercises all day. I wonder if she likes her job. Does she hate her coworkers? Is she miserable? Is her home life a mess? Sure, I wonder these same things about the men who do the same job. I just never imagine what they'd look like naked. I once did a story for Maxim magazine about men who married women who worked as toll booth attendants. They'd fall in love with and successfully courted women 5 to 10 seconds at a time over a period of years. I wonder if that's what she dreams will happen to her as many of the same cars pass by. She'd be waiting for her knight in shining armor. She's probably not looking for a blogger in a cedar green 2007 Saturn View. She's never once acknowledged me, even after all the times I've made eye contact and mouthed thank you for not directing me over the bridge edge to my certain death. And now, as of today, she'll be gone from my life forever. She'll have taken her little red flag to some other desolate stretch of highway, perhaps to charm other strangers who have trouble explaining an odd attraction to something so mean-looking. Don't worry about me, I'm fine. And I'll be fine, I'm sure. I imagine right now Val's in a mood to tell me just where I can go. I don't think that's correct to say Happy Memorial Day. It should be more like Have a Reflective Memorial Day. It should be a somber holiday. But we like to party, so we'll do as it comes. Learn the fine art of knowing precisely when to quit. Thank you.